Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to Dancing in the Discomfort Zone podcast. I'm Ann Bonnie. I am your host, and I am thrilled to bring Penny Zenker onto the show today. She is the focusologist. Have you ever felt like maybe you're not focused or you're not as productive as you could be? Well, Penny has done a lot of research in all of her experiences needing to be able to move through and be productive. And she has become one of America's leading experts on the psychology of productivity. How do I eliminate distraction, perfectionism, and self-sabotage? How do I do that so I can get the best results? I want to know. And here she is. All right, we are dancing in the discomfort zone today with Penny Zenker. Penny, how are you today?
Oh, great to be here. So excited.
Where are you geographically?
I'm just outside of Philadelphia.
Oh, nice. East Coast. I was in Baltimore for a long time, right up the street. I love Philly.
Yeah, it's a great city. Although they call it the city of brotherly love, and I'm not really sure that there's that much love coming out of us from, but it's a great city.
You know, I remember very distinctly, I had a speaking engagement in Philadelphia one time, and I had a room service. The lady that brought my room service was so awesome. And like, I wanted her to deliver my breakfast every single day. And she goes, they call it the city of brotherly love because of me. And I was honey. And that was probably 7 or 8 years ago. And I still distinctly remember it. It was awesome.
It's great. When you have an experience like that, right? It's so great because... And that just shows you customer service and how easy it is, right? For that one line and that great energy that they brought and that's it, right? You remember it for forever.
Yep. I don't even remember what I had for breakfast, but I do remember her. She was amazing. So anyway, let's talk dancing in the discomfort zone and what you specialize in. But you've also, just start with your life and kind of how you got to this point. You have danced in the discomfort zone quite a bit. Moving to Switzerland, obviously marital discomfort and all that, being on an executive team where people weren't excited to have you. So tell me a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, you know, I think I started dancing in the discomfort mostly when my father died in an accident when I was 19. So I think that I made a choice during that time, and I didn't realize what a gift it would be for my life to decide to dance in the discomfort as a result. You know, based on an accident, you could go the other way too. You could say, I'm kind of fearful. I'm gonna retract. I'm not gonna take risks. I'm gonna play it safe and play it easy. And I think it made me say, I gotta live my life now. I've gotta be bold and try new things and get out there. And so that's what I did. Yeah. I got a 1 year assignment in Switzerland and stayed there for 16 years, right?
Oh, because, wow.
That's what one does. And I, you know, it's not hard enough to start your own business here in a country speaking your own language, right? Let's amp it up a little bit. And then, you know, so I did that when I was in Switzerland, you know, and it's German speaking where I was, and it wasn't without challenge. But, you know, built a successful business, built it up to a multi-million-dollar business, and a French company bought our company, which is funny because if I wasn't dancing in the discomfort enough, speaking, you know, German in a German culture, now let's bring in the French, right? The French and the Germans, they don't get along. And so that was really an interesting journey. And actually being in Switzerland, and then I'll shut up and we'll interact. But I think this is also really interesting that that my ex-husband, he really opened my world up to this adventure that I love, but I wouldn't have necessarily, you know, I don't know how to read a map, so I probably wouldn't have found these really great trails but he loved doing all that and took me on so many amazing adventures. I've gone glacier walking, you know, where you're all like connected with rope just so you don't fall down into like a crevasse and a hole because you're walking across this glacier. Yeah. I've done these Caramore runs. They're like these two-day hike run up and down the mountains. I did a tandem mountain bike race that was a marathon So I've done some really cool things and really pushed my comfort zone. And I feel like it's made me more resilient and just a stronger, better person as a result.
Yeah. Now you, it sounds like you were starting with a little of that resilience. What do you think made you take the go live route versus the stay safe route after your dad died?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. People say, well, is it in your nature? Right. And I think my mom is a very positive person. So, you know, watching her as she navigated that challenge, but I don't know. It just felt like, you know, your choices are in front of you. And if you're conscious of those choices, you're like, well, this one sucks. Like, you know, I live my life like in a, afraid of everything. Like that just sucks. I'm not going to do that. So I think it's maybe I was just more conscious of the choice. And very often people get lulled into a particular path and then it just unwinds and keeps going. Right. And I think that, I was just more conscious of it and made that decision. And I made it pretty quickly because not 6 months later did I take a semester overseas. So separate from Switzerland, as I said, I've got to get out of this environment. I have to experience myself. And, you know, sometimes we have to take the long journey away to see what's right in front of us.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I did. 6 months later, I took a semester abroad, and just kind of helped me to get things in perspective. And I think that was the first step that then led to this hunger for let's live our life. Let's do, you know, I'm not crazy things, but let's do big things.
Yeah. Let's do things. Let's live the life. Well, and I'm a strong believer, and then I'll get to the focusology part, but I'm a strong believer that international travel and even living abroad, because I grew up abroad, has such an impact on your resilience and your strength and your ability to deal with all the crap that we can't control, that's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, totally. I mean, if you're in a different culture, you've got to figure it out. You know, it's uncomfortable. You don't know the road signs, everything's different, right? Than you're used to seeing, especially if you're in a foreign country and then the language is different and there's all these conversations going on around you and you don't know what my first job there, they gave me this assignment. Everything was in German. They wanted to make an example of this American and not speak any English to them. And it was really hard. It was really hard.
I mean, you may speak German now because you were there for 16 years, but did you have any German at that point?
No, my company sent me over there and they said you didn't need it, which all Swiss, they're like beautiful linguists and they, you know, they speak English, but they were making a point with me that they wanted me to learn the language. You know, Americans are notorious for, you know, not learning the language and we don't have to get in that whole discussion, but, you know, I was trying, but I didn't take the class until I got there. And of course, sink or swim, it does work, right?
Yep,
they
yep.
didn't speak to me in anything but German. And even though it was very isolating and uncomfortable, I rose above.
You made it work. Made it work. So how did you get from there to where you are today, being such an expert on the psychology of productivity?
Well, I guess, you know, the discomfort, it makes you focus, right? You got to get focused on what's important. And because it's that overwhelm.
Yeah.
Right. So you're experiencing, whether it was my dad's death or working in a foreign country, it's overwhelming. And that's probably it. I've actually never heard this come out of my mouth. So it's interesting, you know, being in an interview and having different things. But I think that's probably part of it, is that during those times of overwhelm, it's focusing on what you can control, focusing on what matters most, and then trying to, you know, let go of all of those things that don't matter. And then I also like improving things, right? So that's also the productivity aspect, is I was in technology, or I got into technology, and was building applications to help people to work smarter. And, you know, with that, it's also part of how do we rethink the way that we do things, especially with technology, so that we can do it faster or put our time into those things that really need the quality of our work, and let those sort of things that can be automated or templated or whatever, you know, let those be done in that way.
I'm fascinated that you came from the tech space and now you're working so much in the mindset and sort of the brain space. Talk to me a little bit about that. Because I think both of them are super important these days when it comes to actual productivity, right? Like we need to
They
combine
are.
both. Yeah.
They are. And they were always important together. And I think that's where it came from is actually, I always loved psychology. When I was in high school and middle school, whatever, everyone came to me to tell me their problems. And, you know, I even thought I was going to be a psychiatrist or whatever, but somebody once told me that psychiatrists go crazy. So, you know, back when I was in ninth grade, I believed that. And I was like, oh, okay, I won't do that. But I've always loved it. And as I started to do coaching after I left the, you know, sort of pure technology, my kids were, you know, young. And so I wanted to do something where I had the flexibility. I realized that I would give people the solutions. I'd be like, here's what you do. Here's how you do it. And they didn't do it. Nothing. And I'm like, what the heck? I just told you exactly how you can double your business. And here's the technology that can save you all this time. And then they don't do it. And then I was like, oh, okay, there's something to this mindset piece that we can't just give people resources and tell them how to fix their problem, right? They have to come to it themselves. They have to be resourceful in the way that they use their time and how they approach a situation. And so that was like, you know, that's where the boom, this is how we marry the two together.
Yeah, that light bulb moment. Now, is that what the reset mindset is? Because that's the book that just came open for pre-sale.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it's like language evolves, right? So for me, I didn't know what it was. Like, and you're trying to think of, you know, especially as a keynote speaker, you know, what is different? What is my approach? How do I describe that in a different way so that people can understand it and embrace it? Because it's more like people say, oh, you know, it's about focus. Well, what is focus? Right? We might all have a different definition of what focus is. It's not just attention. It's so much more than that. And so that's how I came to this language is that, and going back again to my father's death is there was a pattern of resetting in my life. Like it started out as a resiliency of, okay, let's get back up. Let's take some of these, what I call now reset moments to ground myself, to feel more in control at a time where I felt overwhelmed or not in control, right? Reset moments to refocus on what I can control. To bring my emotions into check. And then I started to see these reset moments everywhere, right? Then it was like, hey, you know, I'm having a conflict with somebody. This is a great time for me to take a step back and say, what's going on here? You know, and just give myself some space to think a little bit. And, you know, I guess it would be the same in application development and, you know, they have a prototyping practice, right? And so, and I was doing it through that is you'd reset each prototype to get the feedback in and then to incorporate it into the software and then to iterate, right? So resetting is iterative. It's like reset moments are a series of iterative steps, like a feedback loop.
Well, and it sounds like a reset moment doesn't have to be a big giant life event either. In fact, it shouldn't be. It can just be a moment to say, whoa, 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 now's the moment. Like nothing crazy just happened, but I feel like enough has changed since I last stopped and planned that I should stop and plan again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or just pay attention, right? Yeah. We're like on autopilot all the time. So we're not fully present and we're not seeing what's the consequence. Here are two choices in front of me. And am I making the best choice? But you're right. Most of the time we think about a reset as like those big moments. And those are resets too, right? And resets are relative. They can be over a long period of time or longer, or they can be in just that split second in the moment. And so I'm just helping us to give it some language and be conscious of it. And then when we do that and we have a label for it, we can approach it in a more productive way.
I love it. I love it. Now talk to me a little bit about autopilot, because the beauty of habits is we don't have to think about them. We just do the thing that we've always done that got us the results that we've always gotten and we're good. And it's a comfortable, easy place to be in autopilot. And so a lot of people just kind of live there. How do we know when it's a time to turn off the autopilot, take the wheel again, and have that reset moment?
Wow, so many things coming through my head.
Well, yeah, sorry, I'm just comfortable.
It's comfortable until it isn't.
Well, totally. That's exactly the problem.
So, and when it isn't, it's because you didn't take these reset moments and you realize that you are way far away from where you wanted to be.
Right.
So you better take one now. If you're feeling the discomfort, you better take a reset moment and really check in, right? And, mm-hmm. and see, is this really where you want to be headed? And if you don't make a change, what then? Like, where will you be in another 5 years or whatever that time frame is, right? So sometimes we have to kick ourselves in the butt by the consequence of, you know, will that create a heart attack or drive all the people in our lives away, right? Because of the way we're behaving or showing up and we don't realize it, or will we be 20 pounds heavier, you know, whatever that might be. But I'd say that there's two different ways that I say that we can take these reset moments. And we take them all the time. It's just, we don't recognize them. So when we recognize them, then we're going to get more out of them. But so that autopilot, if we would just create different check-ins, and often in our process, we have some check-ins, but what happens is we don't actually go, we don't really, like, let's say we have a checklist to do something, right? Mm-hmm. We're just used to, we've done this same process over and over again, and we have a checklist, but we really don't use it anymore, right? So, and that happens across the board. And that's why we have safety issues in some organizations, is because they're not following the safety checklist that they should. But you take certain industries like pilots, they're pretty darn focused on their checklist and making sure they go through each and every one of them, because they know that it's critical to, you know, to their life and to the life of anybody that they're carrying in their plane. So, and I think we need to live like that is, and if it's not working anymore and we find that we're skipping those checks or those debriefs or those timeouts that we might need to take, those pit stops, that's when we need to change them up. Mm. Right. So for instance, I had a gratitude practice after my divorce, and it helped me to stay positive and stay, I don't want to say positive because it's not about toxic positivity. It helped me to stay true hopeful. To who I wanted to be. Yeah. Hopeful and true to who I wanted to be and how I wanted to show up.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't focus on gratitude, I might focus on anger or other emotions that would have me show up differently to my kids. And that would have affected the way that they grew up. But, and so I did this practice for like a good 7 years, and it was great. And I feel good. And then I started to just go through the motions. I did it, but I wasn't really connected to it anymore. Mm-hmm. So things work until they don't. So I had to mix it up. I had to say, you know what, this form of writing in a gratitude journal, I'll have to put it down and, mm-hmm. and do something else. So start writing notes to people, or, you know, start just randomly complimenting people. You know, when you recognize something, instead of letting it slip and say, wow, I love your hair today, or, you know, thank you for sharing that nugget of feedback that made me, you know, feel really great. So whatever the compliment might be, but recognizing instead of skipping it over to really use that. So we have to mix things up, right? If the checklist isn't working, then what could we do differently to make that fresh?
Yeah. And effective for us.
Yes.
And you said there were two kinds of reset moments. What's the other one?
So I said them in the same context. So one is a check-in.
Oh, got
and
it.
One is a timeout, right? So a check-in is like part of our process. So that would kind of be our checklist. But a timeout would be, like you were saying, an autopilot, like a timeout would be just recognizing that something's off, right? I'm tired. Somebody barked at me a little bit, and that's not their normal behavior. So maybe instead of barking back at them, right, I'm going to take a time out, and I'm going to say, maybe ask myself a question or ask them a question. Hey, what's going on? Right. And so that time out, just like in sports, right, it can change the game. So we're going to just take that moment to rethink, to pause, to see, you know, how to approach this in a better way.
Nice. So it sounds like One of the reset moments is kind of scheduled and strategic and you know, periodic. And the other one is kind of instigated by that discomfort, by saying, whoa, whoa, either this isn't working anymore, or I'm not connecting with this person in the way I used to. Something must be up. It's that moment of discomfort that makes you say, let me just stop and think about this for a sec.
Absolutely. The moment of discomfort does, it is a trigger. But I want to also say that a moment of success can trigger it as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and we don't do it enough in that side. We tend to be more apt to do it if there's a mistake or that discomfort. But also, hey, we just crushed it, right? We had the best month that we've ever had. Ask yourself for a moment, what led to that? What did we do that was different than last month that got us this result? Right. And just by asking a couple questions so that you can double down on what is working is also a really effective way to use, you know, to use a timeout. And that can also be pre-scheduled, but it's dynamic, right? The timeouts are dynamic, that you do it when and where you need it based on whatever cue or trigger or, you know, feeling might identify that it's time for one.
Right. Well, and I feel like the beauty of these, just the stop and reset moment, is that it does help you stay focused on the right stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? It keeps us productive in the right way, so we don't go a mile and a half off course.
Exactly. It is totally connected.
Nice. So what are some other ways in those, not in the reset moment, but like between reset moments, that we can increase productivity and focus and get rid of the procrastination, which I am a master of, and self-sabotage and things like that?
Oh, totally. Well, aren't we all, right? That's one of the main things we need to all do is if we're in, recognize when we're in our way so that we can, you know, get out of the way. I would say like something easy, right, is to sandwich your day, for instance, right? And we've heard this all the time that it's really valuable to, in the beginning of the day, to plan and sit down and say, here's what the day entails. So, you know, why not? So I have a 1-3-5 planning method, and it's kind of a worksheet that allows you to first, you know, identify mentally the space you want to be in. Is what's your word of the day? And those things really work, right? To help us again, to focus. Maybe today I'm feeling tired, and so I want to be energized. Or maybe I want to be, maybe I want to be focused, or maybe I want to be calm. Or,
And this is the energy of the mindset that you talked about in your TEDx talk, where you're like, if you believe it, you're much more likely to go and do it.
Well, yeah, if you believe it, definitely you're much more likely to go and do it. And that is my TED talk was the energy of thought. And it's perfect. And it is, but it's also those words that we use, right? Words have energy, they have direction, right? And they have intensity. So we have to decide what intensity do we want to have? It's not just about believing it, it's also about being intentional, right? Mm-hmm. It's just being intentional and saying and purposeful as to this is what I want to create. This is how I want to show up for today's circumstance. Maybe you have a really important client meeting or a difficult discussion. So what is it going to take from you so that you stay focused on that? So that part of yourself can come out. Maybe you need courage for a particular day, or maybe if you're procrastinating, right, then you need clarity. So, right. Mm-hmm. So it's thinking about what do you need today based on what you're going to be doing. And then the 1-3-5 is take one thing that's a long-term strategic thing, because usually urgency crowds out those important and impactful things. And then, you know, you're like, what happened this quarter? I didn't do anything that really moved the needle. I just did all these other little things. And so that way, one thing that's moving that forward, three things that are moving towards midterm milestones, and then five things that absolutely must be done by you today. And that helps us to challenge our urgencies. Like we live in an age of false urgencies, and that's what's in our way, is our own sense of urgency that everything has to be done today and now. that I need to please everybody. You know, though, that's where that self-sabotage can come in. So we have to give ourselves permission to say, nope,
yeah,
only these are absolutely on my must-do today.
Well, and I love that tactic. And I use a similar one where it's like, these are the must-dos. The rest of the stuff, yes, I need to get them done eventually. And if I do them and not these five things are going to suffer. And they're the most important ones right now.
Exactly. And you can have a separate list. Like, you know, we've heard that, what's his name? Bill Gates, Charlie Munger, like, you know, all these really super successful people, they have like their short list and then they have an overflow list, right? Then, or even the list of don't touch that, like whatever you do, that's going to suck you into a rabbit hole. So don't do that.
Oh, that's an interesting one to say, or even to put a time on that. Like, don't touch this until 4 p.m. or something like that, to be able to control your urges, as it were.
No, absolutely. It's actually one of the things that I work with, and some of the CEO clients that I work with is how do you make sure that your morning is yours, right? So don't schedule or allow any meetings, you know, no things that are going to suck you into other things. You know, don't check your email first thing in the morning, because that's going to suck you into someone else's priority, right? So have a time for it, that you have a block in the morning from until 10 a.m., for instance, because that's our best time as well. And put your most important things there. And you can have an out of office or a message to people. You're going to get back to them, you know, by 11 o'clock or whatever it is. And most times all we need to do is set some expectations with people, because they're in this urgency mode. So they're going to pass it to you. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need to do it urgently. So it can sit in your inbox for, you know, for an hour. It's not gonna create a problem. Unless you're a brain surgeon, right? I think you're probably okay.
Well, just like the billboards say with texting, right? It can wait. What can wait so that the things that you don't want to have to wait can get your full attention? And it's so interesting that you talked about sort of protecting that morning time, because I did that this morning. I didn't have anything till 1 o'clock and I got some really good, solid work done.
Yeah.
So it's super valuable.
Totally.
I love it.
And then just the other side of the sandwich is not to forget the end of the day, right? Is also because we tend to, at the end of the day, then we feel like, oh, I didn't get this done. I didn't get this done. Like I used to be in a habit where I would just sort of feel awful at the end of the day because I didn't do everything. Well, we're never going to do everything. So we're always going to feel awful. So I review the things that I did do. I look at my 1-3-5, and then I also see what were the things that I did do that instinctively I recognized that I focused on those things that mattered. And I may have taken some of the other things off the list. So I can just celebrate that and then, you know, plan for my next day. I can look at what distracted me today so that I can try to avoid that, you know, in the future. And where did I have those reset moments? Where could I have had them? You know, where could I create better transitions, right? Be thinking of that. These transitions are so important because we've lost them. We go from meeting to meeting that are back to back. We don't even have like getting in the car to go somewhere anymore. We can clear our head. So how do we recognize where did we have those transitions and where do we need to put them in? Things
I
like
love
that.
I love it. And it's, and I think the thing that I needed to learn that I didn't learn nearly far ago enough, I learned it way too recently, is that this isn't a destination. This is a constant flux. And that's why the reset moments come in, because it's constantly requiring us to look at what do I need to do? Where do I, you know, where do I go from here based on right now? And it's never the same, which can be a challenge.
Right. But it is what it is, right? It is that it's always changing. So we have to have dynamic processes and a dynamic way of thinking to approach things. Is if we're static, then, you know, then we're going to experience a lot of stress and overwhelm because it's the resistance that's creating that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it sounds like
dance with the discomfort, right? So it's a dance.
Hallelujah. Well, and the system can be the constant, of course, until, as we talked about earlier, the system doesn't work anymore. And then we have a reset moment on the system. I love it. I love it. So final question here. I'm always curious, as an expert in the psychology of productivity, where do you currently struggle with your own productivity?
Squirrel, squirrel, squirrel. I mean, you know what is, just because people study it, there's a reason. It's a reason why people study it, right? I'm sure that I'm undiagnosed something. But I struggle like everyone else. I have two kids and, you know, I have a dog and she just ate something and threw up this giant, I don't even know what she ate. And she needed, you know, calls to the vet and everything. So we have life, right? Life is messy. And so, and right now I'm juggling maybe one too many projects. So my thing is getting out of my own way, because I do, we talked in the beginning, I want to live, you know, I want to do these big things.
Say yes.
So I say yes to a lot of things, a lot of big things that, you know, that sometimes I need to have some better questions and better timing, because if we're starting new things, they take a lot of energy. So I have a lot of newer things and so it's requiring a lot of different energy. So that's where I'm balancing right now.
Well, and I think that's such an important thing for the rest of us to hear, because it's that the expert in productivity doesn't have it all figured out. So we can all give ourselves a little bit of grace when we don't feel like we were as productive as we could have been.
Oh, I think that's absolutely. But that's the benefit of these reset moments, right?
Totally.
Is that anytime you have permission, and that's my process, is if I feel overwhelmed, I feel like there's too much on my plate, then I take that reset moment. I'm like, okay, what can I take off my calendar? What's not urgent? What can I take off? How can I free up my energy? Do I need to go take a shower, walk the dog? So anytime when we need it, we can just take it just to see what we need right now to be more effective and efficient.
Yeah, I love it. The Reset Mindset is the book. Came up for pre-sale. When does it come out?
It's coming out in September.
So exciting.
It is. It's so exciting for anybody that decides to pre-order. There's going to be a number of extra bonuses that when the book is out in September, that they won't necessarily get the benefit of that. So there'll be a lot of really rich bonuses that they're going to get, that is content that's also not in the book. So it's extra bonus.
And that's if they pre-purchase.
Yes, pre-purchasing, because it also helps me to see how many, so I don't run out of books, that I know.
Yeah, right, sure.
So that's a gift to me. And in return, then I'm going to share some gifts for those who are so inclined.
That's great. So the resetmindset.net is that website, if they want to go and look that up right now. Penny'sAnchor360.com is your website. If they want more information from you, I will put all of those in the show notes so you can just do a quick clickety click. Thank you so much for your time, for your insights, and for the permission to not be perfect with this productivity stuff.
Oh, Anne, thank you so much for having me here. It's always a blast talking to you.
I love it when an expert in something says they haven't mastered it yet. It's one of those things, like, it gives me hope for us mortals. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, hopefully, for getting some of your time back. Such an important message. I love this reset moment where it's just, you know, how often are we going so fast and so hard because we're busy people? That we forget to stop and say, is this the best thing to be doing right now? Is this the right approach to this right now? Or do I want to try something else to maybe get better results from my life? And I think so much challenge would be avoided if we took more of these reset time little moments. So the Reset Mindset's the book. The resetmindset.net is the website. So go check that out. And thanks for listening, everybody. We got more amazing content coming up for you next week. So thanks for listening, and we'll bring you some more great stuff next week.